Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle podcast. I have with me today a very special person. Her work's been really, like, truly wonderful. And I gotta say here, and I've read a bit of her work prior to working in comics today, but she's truly astounding, truly wonderful lady. And I'll go ahead and introduce yourself, because honestly, it's an honor to have you here on the show.
Hi, I'm Shannon McGuire. People generally let me introduce myself because no one can pronounce my name. Thanks, Mom. And I currently do work for Marvel Comics. I am the architect of Spider-Gwen Ghost Spider, and I'm writing the Amazing Nightcrawler for the Age of X-Men event.
Yeah, and by the way, you were given, like, I was recommended to you a little bit too, because I've had the writers from Age of X-Men on here from, I'm drawing a blank on the name here, the X-Men series, Uncanny X-Men.
Zach and Lonnie?
Yeah, Zach and Lonnie actually said some good words. They're like, oh yeah, she's amazing in what she does, an amazing person and whatnot too, because I had them on the show just a little bit ago, actually.
Well, they live really close to me, so I think that they have a reasonable amount of fear that I'll just show up at their houses if they say mean stuff.
The stuff spray painted on, like, what is, like, there's a knock on the door as soon as it happens, like, you hear about it, like, hey, fair enough.
And that gives me credit for a lot less inherent inertia than I possess, but...
It's still some. I mean, I think maybe it ties into that fear. Maybe it's one of those, it's like, I gotta play it cool. But, they're really, those two guys are wonderful.
They're really great.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, we had a blast with them and whatnot, and... They were, for your work on Nightcrawler, they were really happy to, like, talk about it. And at the time, they couldn't really say what you were doing, but it's really great work. So I just got to say that. And you, before we start, I want to go back in time and visit younger you a little bit. Because, like, before we start getting into the comics a little bit, because you've been a writer for a lot longer of a time than you've been working in comics. Am I right?
Yep, 10 years now.
Actually, 10 years is pretty astounding because... A lot of people I know who have written, because you've published books, you've done a bunch of things, and How did that start? Like, how did you, because we're all writers and one-up, you actually went out there and did it. You got the initiative, you got out there, you did it, you got stuff published. Now you're working in comics as a medium, but you were a writer and got many things published and done. Just, how did the inspiration come to you for that? Like, what was it that showed you your writer?
I wrote a book, I found an agent, she found me a publisher, and we just kind of rolled from there. Inspiration is the cheapest thing in the world. Being willing to sit down and do the work is really where you start getting into the complicated parts.
Yeah. As a writer, it's definitely the most difficult. Like, creating the story, that's tough. The initiative, though, that's tougher because so many people have good ideas, they just never write them down and go for them, I think. Have you found that a little bit, too? Like, among friends and maybe yourself as well? It's like, but you seem pretty dedicated, though.
I am.
Yeah, and so have you seen anybody, like, with that? Like, have you kind of been a part of it, of you've seen fellow writers come and go, but with you, what's been the main driving force for it? Just, like, you want to be out there and be a writer full-time sort of thing?
That was my goal until I got it, and Now my goal is to remain a full-time writer, because writing is not easy. Once you start actually having to keep track of things for an audience and you're not just doing it for yourself and for your own amusement, there's a lot of work involved. And for a while there, I functionally had two full-time jobs because I was writing all night and I was working all day, and I can't do that.
No.
It's not good for you mentally. It's not good for you physically. It's not good for you socially. And so I need to be able to continue doing what I do. That means working as hard as I can so that I don't end up in a position where I have to get a second job.
Yeah, you don't want to have to do that. So the fact is that you were able to do just that, what people always strive to do, should be like an inspiration for a little bit of others, of folks who be like, yeah, you can do it. It's possible. And working in two jobs and then getting it full-time in the writing, and that's some pretty damn good motivation. Be like, no, I don't want that second job. I don't want to be like whatever it was you did beforehand. You know, you don't want to get back to it. And you want to be able to create. Yep. That's a good motivation right there, I think, which writers do need as a people, as workers, to say the least.
Yeah, it is possible. The landscape changes all the time. So somebody who came up even just 10 years ago, which is such a short period of time when you really think about it, any career building advice I could give stands a good chance of being completely wrong to where the market sits right now. I'm not a new writer in this market.
Mm. And that's true. It's always changing. It's kind of fluid, I guess you could say, because it's always changing with how books have been themselves, been changing from online to digital to not anymore, because different people like, so it's always weird. Like, how has it been in 10 years with that? Like, what's it been your experience as a writer with books?
People love books. Books themselves have stayed basically the same. When I first started, self-publishing was very limited, very difficult. It's much easier now to self-publish a book, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. It's great because it means that if you've written something good that doesn't have a big built-in audience, you don't have to wait for the gatekeepers to feel like the sales are out there. You can just go right ahead and publish now. Mm-hmm. But it's bad because you can just go right ahead and publish now. And I do feel like sometimes we get impatient. We don't want to wait to be ready. Mm-hmm. And so we just leap right ahead and put something that maybe isn't done baking on the shelves. You know, we've had issues with indie authors, which is the current vocab for self-pub, gaming systems, because they feel like they're being shut out of all of the big promo areas and all of the big exposure, which you kind of are, because those big promo areas are paid for by our traditional publishers.
Yeah.
If you don't have the thousands of dollars to pay for that recognition, for that discoverability, you are not going to be able to get into it. And that sucks, but that is something that you chose by choosing to go with self-publishing and having that degree of control over your work and where it goes. It's also been entertaining because the more self-publishing is out there, if you self-publish, you are giving up money and discoverability for control to a large degree. You get to pick your cover art. You get to pick what regions you release in. You get to pick so many things that I have absolutely no authority over. And if you get to pick those things, readers to whom this whole process is fairly opaque and they don't necessarily care, they just want a book to read. Readers assume that I get to pick those things too.
Which is far from the case.
Which is far from the case. Yeah. So your book is not available in ebook in Australia because you're a mean person. Accusations have really climbed in the last couple of years as people assume that I have the exact same privileges that you do. And that's frustrating because I am fundamentally lazy. I don't want to be a publisher. If I wanted to be a publisher, I would be a publisher. I want to write books. I can't both write books and be a publisher, not at the volume that I produce. And so I'm not interested in self-publishing, which is a little bit arrogant to be able to say, but it's also true. I want someone else to do all of that work, and I'm willing to give up a certain amount of potential profit to have someone else doing all of that work for me so that I don't have to. And I guess you could spin that into I don't care, or I would hold on to those rights and those abilities. I do care. I care very much, but I'm very tired.
Yeah, which, I mean, you want to work hard, and you don't want to take on the extra responsibility that will affect what you're writing in general. Like, it affect the end product. Like, it could definitely be like, oh, I'm too tired. Well, I just got to do this scene here. And it could affect what a person could be reading because you're taking on all that work. So, I mean, I respect it. It's really commendable that you actually were like, okay, I can't do this, and I'd rather put it to someone else. People who think, like, hate on it, well, it's the internet. Everyone loves to hate, sadly. But
yeah.
So, that's this one thing, too, is I just don't know why people... That's why I give you guys so much credit for out there and publishing books and whatnot. I really do, because it can be a tough marketplace. Like, especially in comics, it can be a tough marketplace for people who are writers and whatnot, because people can easily go on Twitter and be like, oh, I can't get it. Oh, you're a terrible human being. What? No. There's a good reason probably why.
I have been professionally publishing for 10 years, and I have been called a fat, stupid cunt more times since the release of my first Marvel book than in the previous 10 years.
Really? Like on Twitter or in person?
On Twitter and an email and just, you know, how dare you come in here and pretend to love comic books so that you can steal jobs from people who really deserve them. Apparently my weight does impact the quality of my work, which I had never been aware of before.
Aww.
You'd think I would have noticed.
Yeah.
But
That's kind of disheartening to hear. Like, that's, I know it happens. And to those people out there who maybe listen to this show, you can go fuck yourself. Because, like, if you say that stuff, they're like, to you, like, why would, I don't know what people's initiative is to hate like that. It's because I hear it from people who, like, you're just not yourself, which floors me to hear that shit. Because creators should be fun. If a person's a creator and they're actually going out in 2019 and still creating and writing, you know, it takes a lot of damn guts. Because you get hated on a lot. So why, I don't know, that just floors me for that shit. Like, that, I hate it with a passion, because people get, like, the death notes and the death letters. Yeah. Like, oh, screw you, we're going to find you and kill you. Like, why? Like, what is the point?
I think everybody wants everyone to love everything they do. I know I would be happier if it was widely agreed that everything I wrote was pure genius and needed to be reprinted 1,000 times. But I don't mind fair criticism. I don't know any writers who do. There's a big, big difference between fair criticism and I haven't read a single word you've written, but I know that it's all trash because you are a stupid social justice warrior slut.
Wow. You gotten that?
You know, I have not gotten that exact construction. I've gotten stupid social justice warrior. I've gotten obviously blowjobs my way to the top. That was my favorite, actually, the person who flat out said, I know that you sucked a lot of dick to get this job. Because it was like, how powerful do you think blowjobs are?
Yeah, they're not
the very best at blowjobs. Like, do I get a medal? I would like a medal.
It's true. It's like the automatic, like, oh, you do a blowjob, you get a job. No, you don't. It doesn't work like that.
Like, no. Also, you know, quite honestly, if it were that easy, I think that I would have spent a lot less time trying to get this job.
It's really like, oh, well, just gotta do that thing. And it's not that I love people sometimes. It's a love-hate relationship. And the fact of, like, they can just be really stupid with that. And the fact you're getting this hate makes no fucking sense to me. Because over, I've heard from people, you're a nice person. You're a very nice person. Your work is very great. I love it. You know, if there's a problem with that, okay, so like, oh, this here was okay. Or we didn't really like the part that you did with this in your book. Or Spider-Gwen or something like that. That is reasonable. But the shit like that should just stop. Like, I wish we lived in that world where we didn't get shit like that. Because this is stupid. And the listeners at home, be fair in criticism. Don't be a dick. Like, the fuck?
I try really hard to be a nice person. I wish we lived in a world where if you said those things to me saying, what the fuck is wrong with you, would not suddenly get me labeled a bitch.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I think part of why you'll find that especially women who hang on in comics for more than 5 minutes tend to have reputations for being really nice person, really nice people. It's because we don't have a choice. Even if I want to be like, what the fuck, my dude, I can't. And that's just going to lead to this belief that we're all being disingenuous. Because if you know that we don't have a choice in our niceness, then how can you trust that we're actually nice people?
Yeah, and that's why I always hold the utmost respect for women and women in the creative fields. Because as a guy who works in film and also in theater too, I hear these stories a lot. And it's stupid. It's especially in film too. They're like, oh, you got the role, you must have sucked. No, she worked hard, and she really worked. That's why, like, as a woman throughout all time, well, if you're as I'm a guy, but as I've given so much respect to a woman, I'm like losing my train here, is I've given so much respect to a woman, and I still do to this day, because if you go out there, like, you always get hated on no matter what the fuck you do. And I think in comics people are like, oh no, it's a man thing, because it was guys for such a long time. But now with yourself in there, you know, with you writing and being in just working in this field of creating, I think maybe some people get, like, frustrated at that. They're like, oh, she can do it, I should be able to do it. So then they give you all this hate shit. Maybe that's a reason, but that's no excuse.
No, it's not. And honestly, if it was guys for so long, when everyone has a story about the girl they read comics with, or being that girl. You know, the fact that people like me and Leah Williams can exist.
Yeah.
We didn't spring out of Zeus's forehead fully formed. We had to spend our childhoods reading comic books and growing up to be the giant nerds we are. We've always been here. We just weren't able to get past the door.
Yeah, and it's because it's been so tough. And now in this day and age, you're able to, which I love with a passion, because Everyone should be able to create, everyone should be able to tell their stories, whether in comics or your own books or whatever it may be. But then you get these people who hate on it because, like, oh, woman in it? No. And screw those people. If you're listening and you want to subscribe to me because I said that, I don't give a shit. I don't. Like, this is the most political we've ever been on the show. But it's been this thing of, with you having to, kind of going back to that fact of you having to play nice, I personally would not, if I was in your shoes, I don't know if I could do it. Because I've seen it happen, and I've stood up people who have been shitted on because of it, and I don't know if I could play that nice card. So, like, it's hats off, and I take a bow of respect to you, because, and Leia, because she's got to get it too. Because I think every woman in comics gets it, and guys get it, but not as much. Guys get it, like, maybe because they wrote a bad story or some shit like that, because you're a woman, they automatically, like, let's just go shit on her, which is stupid. It really is. You know, and I think that maybe the world will change so it doesn't affect that anymore, and that hopefully you don't get this hate, because to me, you shouldn't get it. I think people should maybe listen to this and take a look at, like, hey, maybe those people are stupid, or a person who does do it and listening is, maybe those people, maybe I should stop it. Like, maybe. And there's a hope, because obviously you have to try so hard for it, and the fact is that you're able to do it and then still do what you love, and you're still wanting to be in it, though, is very admirable. Okay. Because it would deter a lot of people.
It's exhausting. Yeah. It really is. But I love comics so much. I've grown up in Marvel. The fact that I get to do this now is... it's the culmination of everything I've ever wanted. And that's really important to me.
Yeah, and you don't want to lose it. That's it. You don't want to lose it at all. You want to hold on. This is like your childhood come to life. You know?
Also, I'm a little baffled by the number of people, the number of dudes. I like dudes. I'm not trying to be anti-dude here, but this is a dude phenomenon. The number of dudes who are like, well, women were mean to me in high school, so why are you in my comics world now? You know what? I was a fat nerd with frizzy hair in high school.
Respect.
You think dudes weren't mean to me?
Oh, yeah.
I've literally sat there while the guys that I gamed with sighed and said it would be wonderful if a girl would talk to them. Like, I didn't exist, even though I was in the room, even though I talked to them weekly. I didn't exist because I wasn't the hot cheerleader they had decided they were entitled to have. So if we're gonna play was mean to me in high school and that forgives my behavior now as a viable card, I don't think people will like how many cards the nerd girls have in our hands.
No. Oh, no. And people don't realize, like, everybody's a nerd, technically. Like, everyone's a nerd in their own sense of stuff here. Just be, it flabbergasts me. It really does. And I just don't understand it. And I hope the world changes from that sooner or later. I mean, maybe it's just a youth thing from that high school crap. Maybe. Because they're like, oh, she's not the one. My hormones don't go off around her. It's like, cool. She's still a person. She still loves the same shit you do. Congrats, go talk, go do something like that. And the people in high school who may be listening to this, you know, take a look around you, open the eyes up, and take a look around
women
you.
Women are not vending machines for sex.
No, not in the slightest.
No one is a vending machine for sex, and no one should be treated like that. And if you treat them like that, they're not going to be nice to you.
No. No. And so, guys, men, if you're listening, listen to her. She's telling the truth. Like, some of us are a little bit awakening it. They say woke, I guess. But is some of us realize it, some of us don't. Most men don't. And, you know, sometimes women too. But mostly it's men in the sense here. And I really hope that maybe nerds can realize this and be like, oh, no, it's not just about the sex. It's like, no, people are people. And I wish we could see that. And I hope maybe that this changes more. We start seeing it. We're seeing it change a little bit, though. I think the culture's changed
a little
bit.
We're seeing a change, which is great. The change has to start in story as much as in the real world, though, because part of how we get to these places is stories tell us what the world is going to be like.
Exactly.
You know, we're humans are raised on a steady diet of story, and, oh, that's not real life doesn't really help, because that's not how the human mind works. If you look back at a lot of nerd media, which is media that I really love and that I grew up with, too, huge quantities of nerd media tell you that the nerd, the alpha nerd, whatever he looks like, and he's always a dude. Mm-hmm. The alpha nerd deserves a cheerleader as a reward for being such a good nerd. Whereas female nerds basically don't exist.
Yeah.
And so if all of the media that you're consuming, whether passively or actively, is telling you that girls like me aren't real, then meet a girl like me, the chances that you're going to think, well, she's just faking it for attention. She just wants to get into my space and steal my stuff are much higher. And that's part of why we need everyone involved in storytelling, the whole we need diverse voices thing. We need people coming from different starting points who are going to write these characters from a different point of understanding. Mm. Because that's what makes the stories real, and that's what makes it easier to accept that I actually exist. I'm not a group of actors being paid off to pretend that there's a girl who likes comics. Mm. You know, I have funny colored hair because I like having funny colored hair.
Yeah, be yourself, you know. And that's... Everyone should know, and I'm a big fan of diversity. I think everyone should be involved, especially as creators. I am 100% with you. Like, preach it. Because it really should be that. Diversity, especially in comics, there should be diversity. Because everyone's got a story to tell. And everyone who's trying to tell these stories is 100% a nerd. You know, you don't go to Marvel to go work at Marvel and go work in comics because, like, oh, it will seem cool. No, because you're doing it because you love it. I do the comic show because I love it. You know, I do film because I love it. You know, you're going to do these things because you love it. And obviously, as you told us, you've been a huge fan since childhood. And that's amazing to know that there's a fan working on this stuff too. And being able to come take what they love and take their experience and bring it to other people. And bring it to, like, because fans working on fan-driven stuff, I think, is the best. Fan-driven stuff, especially in nerd culture, comics, movies, everything like that, is definitely the best, I think.
I think it depends on how fixated we are as fans on the era that we came in with.
That's true.
There's a TV trope with the unfortunate name Inmates Running the Asylum, which basically refers to that point where people who fell in love with a franchise 20 years ago get to take it over, and suddenly the franchise regresses 20 years because they really just want to write what was cool when they were kids. It's a problem I feel like Kitty Pryde frequently has, where she was created to be the entry point for people my age when she came in. And so several times now we've seen people who grew up wanting to bang Kitty Pryde get to take over.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with wanting to bang Kitty Pryde. She was very much designed for that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
For people who grew up wanting to bang Kitty get to take over writing for her, and suddenly she loses whatever character development she's had since they stopped actively thinking they could get with her.
Yeah. Which is stupid, because herself, I'm an advocate for Kitty Pryde, not for the fact of wanting to bang her or anything like that, but in the fact of, like, she's a strong woman, and I appreciate that and love that with a passion. Like, she was done of... There has been a couple recent things where you are absolutely right. She has gone back, and I've noticed it. But then when they take her back to who she is, growing up, you know, being a toughie, being an X-Men leader and stuff like that, I'm like, I like that. That's pretty damn cool. Like, she's been the leader, and she's made the lead. You know, she's made to be a part of the X-Men in a big, bad fashion, not just the, I'm a cute girl on the team. No, she's way more, which people always wanted to be like that. She's way more than that, I think. I think Kitty herself is a character who deserves a lot more than she gets credit to.
Agreed. I love Kitty. But, you know, you have things like her creators have said the only reason she was not allowed to be openly bisexual in the comics is because the comics code of the time wouldn't allow for it. Mm. She was always meant to be interested in men and women. Try reading early Excalibur and not seeing how much she wanted to be getting with Rachel and with Saturnine.
Yeah.
That's a part of her character. That's not a retcon. That's not me trying to argue that Jean Grey is a lesbian, because she's not. But again and again, when people try to bring Kitty canonically into the queer community in the comics, you get pushback, usually from straight dudes who want to think of themselves as Kitty Pryde's next boyfriend.
Which is kind of weird, because at the time, she was what, like 14? And if you wanted
to... She was like 14. Yeah, but I like, was like 9. Weird. So she was the cool older girl.
Yeah. She was the, he was that gal. But then the guys who want to bring her back to like, oh, bring her back to like how she was and she's 14. Bring her back to looking like she's 14. Like, no, that's kind of weird. That's no. It's none of that. Like, I don't get it. It's amazing to me with Guy Fenton. And I think as guys, we need to dial it back a little bit. So fellow men listening, you need to dial it back a little bit. Like, we can't put in our man, like, I don't know. What's the term? I'm drawing a blank on the word. What's the term for it? Like, or testosterone. There we go. We got to dial it back on that because that shit's just way out of control and it shouldn't affect these stories. It really should not and how we perceive them. That's just my opinion. I've said that for a long time. It's like, I said it since teenage years of reading books. Like, why? Like, oh, we want to bang her. It's like, cool. You can want to bang her. Go to Pornhub. There's probably a video of it somewhere. You'd stick almost with that. Certainly. Oh, God. Oh, I don't want to look that up.
Well, I mean, that's what AO3 is for.
It's true.
Sheer quantity of Kitty Pride-centric porn, like full-on porn that I could find for you in 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but it would absolutely derail an actual X-Men comic. It doesn't belong there.
No, it's like, stick to the story, stick to the messages. Take testosterone out of it. Take it out. It's not meant to be in there. It's meant to be able to create. Like, comics are meant to be able to inspire. They're meant to be able to show people, like, hope. They're meant to show people, like, maybe the error of their ways. And a whole bunch of shit to help people out, you know? And a good escapism out of everything. And it's not meant to be, oh, we want to make it so we want a banner. Cool. No, get out of here with that shit. We don't want it. It's not wanted in books. Not, like, at least by me. Not by you. It's not wanted by a good majority. And that majority's rising up. Get that good number is really rising up these days. We're starting to take people take notice.
Yeah, and there's some incredible work being done in adult comics. If that is what you want, is you know,
there is a lot. You're right. There is a lot of work being done in adult comics, I think. But if that's a whole other like kettle of fish, we could really open out a can of worms. But we ain't going down that road. That's a whole different show. But I really think, like, kind of going back on is, I really think that comics is changing. It's not changing the way we want to see it, like, fast enough yet, but I think there still is. I think there's still hope. And...
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be so dedicated to being part of this industry if I didn't think there was hope.
Yeah. And you're holding out. You know, you're really going for it. Like, I heard a little bit of from... A DCR writer we had on a while ago, like, oh, about a year or two ago. She wasn't really talking about it that much, but being able to get this perspective from you on it, I've always heard about it, but I've never been able to get, like, a woman's perspective on it, and I've always wanted to get that. So that's why I want to say thank you for coming out with this and having this conversation, because hopefully this comes on and talks to people, because we're going to get back into, like, Spider-Gwen and stuff like that in a second, but...
Okay, good.
Yeah, don't worry.
Baby, what are you yelling about? Come here.
And so definitely want to say is, like, thanks for coming out and talk about this stuff, because... People need to know, you know, people need to get, like, open their minds up, open their eyes up and stuff like that. But, yeah, that's just all that. And we're moving on now to happier shit because really need to. So you said childhood. Like, childhood really was where you started to fall in love with comics and whatnot, which is a lot of us. What was your – I'm curious, like, what did you grow up with? Like, was it X-Men? Because it seemed like you got a little bit of X-Men love in there. Like, are you a fellow X-Men fan?
Yeah, it was mostly the X-Men. Hey. My childhood comic book store opened when I was 8, just up the street from my aunt's place. Mm-hmm. It was opened by Joe Field, who went on to create Free Comic Book Day, and he was very committed to making sure that his comic book store would be a safe place for girls and female comic fans, which is very rare at the time. Yeah. But he opened it with his wife and 2 daughters. And so I started going in there pretty much immediately, and when he saw me coming, he'd slip comics in the quarter box. Because he knew I didn't have a lot of money.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he was great. But so I grew up primarily on the X-Men because I could not afford to keep up with more than one big franchise.
Yeah.
And the X-Men was always my big thing. I also liked the Teen Titans and the Justice and the Legion of Superheroes, not the Justice League so much.
I was about to say, like, that's some really good teams right then and there. That's some really good stuff to like, especially during the time, like, X-Men, and this was what decade was this, if you don't mind me asking?
The 80s into 90s.
80s, oh, that's a good time. Ooh.
Yep.
Oh, that's a good time, especially for X-Men there.
Read a lot of ElfQuest once I hit middle school.
Hey.
Really, really loved Amethyst Princess of Gemworld. I am simultaneously super excited that Bendis is relaunching it over at DC, and a little disappointed, because it's like, my dude, everyone kept telling me this would never happen.
Mm.
I finally got to where I'm writing comics and start thinking, okay, maybe they'll let me relaunch Amethyst in a couple years, and now you're doing it.
It's true.
Sometimes I feel like I've got a Dr. Horrible relationship with Bendis. He is always where I want to be, but a couple years ahead of me, and he doesn't even know that I exist. So
you never know.
It's not his fault that he keeps taking the toys I want to play with, but he has incredibly good aim for taking the toys that I specifically was trying to get to where I could play with.
That's true. Who would have thought we'd get that, by the way, a relaunch of this? I never would. I'm like, it would be fun to have it. But the fact that he's working on it and whatnot, like, wow. And, like, I never would have thought. But, so you're just sitting on the side just being like, oh, man. This like, kid on the playground is like, what should be that kid?
Yeah, you took that last bouncy ball right before I could get there. With Amethyst, having read the most recent attempt at a relaunch, I really hope there are some women in the writer's room. There are some voices from that side, because the most recent attempt at an Amethyst relaunch did not do so well. They added a whole sexual assault subplot.
What?
They took Amethyst to some places Amethyst doesn't need to go.
Yeah, that's not... Sexual assault one is not one you need to take that.
Not for Amethyst Princess of Gemworld. I'm not saying it has to be a children's comic, but I'm saying that, you know, if you are a woman, especially if you're a female comics fan, that constant backbeat of who's going to get raped next is the background radiation of our storytelling lives.
Mm.
We're not looking for that anymore. It's not interesting. It's not fun.
No.
It's not as realistic as some people like to try to insist it is. And having it put into franchises and properties where it doesn't belong, it's like Betty and Veronica getting raped. We don't need that.
No.
No Archie fan is reading, hoping that this is the issue where Veronica Lodge finally gets that stupid mouth of hers slapped shut. Like, that's just not why you're there.
No, it's not. You're not reading to have, like, oh, sexual assault, oh, rape, and all that stuff. Like, no. Like, murder's fine. That's fine. That could happen. But, like, you know, you kill off a character, okay, that's bound to happen sooner or later. But,
it's
like...
It doesn't stick.
No, it doesn't. And that's why they're like, oh, the death of this character. Okay, whatever. Like, I it's a comics trope. I don't know. I don't know if that will ever go away. But, like, the rape thing and stuff like that, like, oh, that whole subject of, like, the rape and everything else that comics will do sometimes, like, rape and, oh, the assault, oh, stuff like that, like, we don't need that. There's just, like, none of that that needs to be allowed. Like,
we wonder why parents aren't buying comics for kids the way that they used to when we were kids.
Yeah.
And part of it is every comics fan I know got a lot more reticent to buy comics for their children after the first time they saw a superhero's girlfriend actually get backhanded across the room just to get them that M rating. Like,
yeah.
We don't need that. This is about people who somehow managed to fly around the city in spandex and actually look good.
Exactly.
There's no realism here to lose.
No, there's not. You're like, you're in a world of people with powers, or you're in a world of vigilantes, or sometimes both. So it's not really, like, you want to escape. You don't want to be faced with real-world problems in comics. And I hate, they're like, oh, it's a real-world problem. No, we don't want that. I'm reading about Krypton fucking exploding, or Spider-Man kind of thing.
I'm a professional overthinker. That's basically what I do for fun is overthink things. Yeah. And if you lived in a world where there were mutants, so you knew that there was a non-zero chance that anybody around you could melt you with a look, would you really assault some random woman on the street?
Oh, God, no. No. Love that. That is
not amazing. That you would do it anyway, because you seem like a nice guy, and I'm not making that assumption about you.
No.
But when you add the potential danger of everyone around you is armed with superpowers, yeah. You don't know.
Yeah, or like a gun that could freeze you, or melt you down, or, you know, or like, not like you could just be a tele, like, turn around and your, like, brain is turned to mush because I just gave you a look.
Right? Like, or I just have have Tony Stark's phone number.
That too. It's like, you try, like, just a robot shows up, boom. Oh, shit. It's just like, oh, well, fair enough. Like, why would you try that shit? It never makes any sense to me. There's some stuff, I think, like, in the world of comics, you just...
Then again, why would you mug anyone in Brooklyn ever?
Why would you live in New York? Why would you be a bad guy? That's what I like to say.
Why would you live in New York? Why would you mug anyone in Brooklyn? A spider person is going to beat the shit out of you.
It's true.
Like, that is a really specific fetish to have, and it doesn't come with dental.
No. Yeah, it does. You wish it did. Like, why? Or if you try committing crime, a villain's gonna kill you. Because, like, oh, not on my turf. Kingpin's like, kill him. Like, why? Like, I don't know. It doesn't make... If you don't have powers, or you're not ultimate, like, supervillain with gadgets or major crime lord, if you want to commit crime in any comic book world, just stop. Because it's not going to work for you. You're going to end up killed or worse, or which you were.
Well, you know, I write a spider book, and spider books live and die on muggings. It's so true. Maybe we should stop pointing out how stupid it is to mug people in a world with superpowers.
It's true. That is true. And kind of nice little segue there is... Spider-Gwen, like, what? I'm just so astounded. Like, Spider-Gwen has been one... When she first debuted, I'm like, I love that concept. That is amazing. She was, like, into the Spider-Verse, I think, or...
2014.
Yes, that was a year. Wow, it's been that long. My God.
Yep. Everybody thought she was going to be here for 5 minutes and then gone forever, me included. Jason Latour, who created her, included. She did not... There was no understanding, I think, of how she would be that perfect combination of vindication and nostalgia. Mm. Because everyone had been pissed off about the way Gwen Stacy died for so long.
Yeah.
So she was an apology. But because of the nostalgia angle, she didn't hit that backlash that normally comes with a new version of an established hero.
Mm.
Right? She's in another world, so she doesn't erase Peter Parker. But also, no one wants to be the person going, well, fuck Gwen Stacy. Like, that doesn't sound like you have a coherent opinion about a character. That sounds like you just really got out of bed wanting to be a misogynist today.
Yeah.
Which is not that it's misogynist to dislike her. You don't have to love Spider-Gwen, though. Who doesn't love Spider-Gwen? But denying her right to exist is kind of a problem when it's Gwen fucking Stacy. She is so beloved.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I love Gwen. There's a story of Gwen Stacy we won't talk about where we're like, what? But the amazing part is pun intended, is Gwen Stacy herself, I think, is a good, I'd almost say she's a good role model, you know, for younger generations of girls and women, you know?
Well, the original Gwen Stacy, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because she was the serious science girl who did her homework and didn't mess around. The modern Gwen Stacy is doing her best. You know, she's a rock and roll drummer, which someone pointed out to me recently is actually being relative, like, being a punk drummer is not as transgressive as people our age tend to think it is.
Mm.
We always think in terms of transgressive based on our own childhoods, kind of like, I still think of $20 as a lot of money, and I think most people do, because when I was a kid, $20 could buy me the world.
Yeah.
Well, $20 can't do that anymore. It lost that buying power a long time ago. It's still a lot of money, but it's not as big as my brain makes it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Punk is not as transgressive as our brains make it out to be. That baton has long since been passed.
That's true. What do you think, too, by the way? I'm curious. What do you think it is now?
Right this second, I don't know. I think for a little while it was EDM.
Yeah. I'd agree on that.
You know, it's probably some kind of electronica or club music right now.
The rave. I think the rave.
Well, the rave is also probably not what a lot of people picture when you say the rave. My sister, who is 7 years younger than me, is still doing the rave scene. And it does not match up with my memories from high school at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'm with you. My younger sister does the same. She's only 3 years younger than me. And it doesn't really, like, I grew up with a very different rave. I was like, that's not the stuff I remember, like, seeing pictures, like, oof. But I think with Gwen Stacy now, though, that we see with her, you know, as a hero, maybe, I think it still could be, so maybe it's not meant for younger, so I think maybe she's meant more for the teenage audience, maybe mm-hmm. like teenage young adult sort of thing, to be like, she's really trying, she's trying to make her way in the world, but you know what, she's also a damn hero and trying to make her way yeah. in this new universe that we somewhat have familiarity with, I think. I mean, most people would, and if you're reading comics, but maybe you say you're new to the character, maybe not, and so I think that's a really good thing to be like, she's not just brought back to life, and now she's Spider-Gwen. It's like, no, she's lived her life. Like, she's living her life, and this is her. This is her world.
Right. In her world, she has always been the only Spider-Person. Yeah. She is Spider-Woman, but she is the Spider-Man cognate of Earth 65, which is a very different situation than the one Miles is in, where, you know, he has always been in the position of being second Spider-Person. Mm. He was the second in the Ultimates world, because he took up the mantle when that Peter Parker died, and he is the second now that he's on 616, because Peter is still around. Gwen has always kind of had to do the great power, great responsibility thing by herself.
Yeah.
And she's working really hard. She tries very, very hard to make right what she does. Every spider kind of has their arc words, and you know, for Peter Parker, it's the "with great power comes great responsibility." For Gwen Stacy, we've been using "you get what you pay for and you own what you build,"
and it's beautiful, by the way. Like, I really like that. That's a t-shirt there.
That's a Stephen King quote.
Is it really?
Yep, it's from Pet Sematary.
Oh, I'm an idiot. I mean, it's been a while since I read Pet Sematary, so there is that, but oh, I didn't think about that.
The only thing I have loved longer and more consistently than I have loved the X-Men is the works of Stephen King.
Oh, well, you can't go wrong with the Mr. King there. No, you can't. It's Stephen King.
Yep, my only tattoo is a quote from The Dark Tower.
Oh, it's beautiful. What is it?
Go then, there are other worlds than these, from the first one. Oh. I left out Gunslinger because I did not want it to be that narrowed.
Yeah. People may take it like a different perspective, like with Gunslinger, but that's true. I love it. So you were able to put that into there. So you're able to combine two loves right then and there. That's amazing. Like, that's.
I'm good at making Stephen King relevant to absolutely everything I do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Like, that leaves me for a loss of words right there, which is kind of tough to do these days, because being able to bring that, like, this with Stephen King, your love there, and to be able to work in comics too, and to be able to put it in there with it. It's truly amazing, and, you know, like, I just really think it's a lot of, it's bringing it back to the working in fandom, bringing your fandom to the fandom, but making it work, you know, and still rolling forward, not going backward, but going forward with it, and I think that's what a lot of people have difficulty doing, but you're obviously making it work, which is brilliant, might I say.
Thank you.
Of course, and I love that, like, having Stephen King in there, and Stephen King should be relevant to the end of damn time. Like, as much as Shakespeare is, Stephen King is the new Shakespeare.
I actually heard someone say, in all seriousness, that Stephen King was the Shakespeare of our time.
Believe it.
And I think they're right, because I studied Shakespeare in college, and Shakespeare was very much writing for the populist audience. He wasn't writing for the highbrow people. So when we talk about, is this going to survive, is this going to be viewed as a way to kind of see this time period once it's not this time period anymore, I think Stephen King stands a way better chance than a lot of the so-called, you know, literary authors.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't do it to just be Stephen King tangent, but this is well worth it, because it's so worth talking about, is Stephen King himself isn't one where he goes and just makes it for those, like, you are absolutely right. He doesn't make it for highbrow people. He makes it for, like, everybody. And he's like, here you go. And he just keeps making. He just keeps making. I had a great route. I don't know how he does it, but.
And there's nothing wrong with being highbrow people. Sometimes I'm highbrow people. Most of the time I'm not. But I think that things are more likely to survive the wider appeal they have.
Yes.
The more familiarity they have. There's a reason that all of the Marvel properties we love, you can mark their big spikes in success and stability by when they were brought to film or television. You know, the X-Men cartoon in the 90s brought in a whole generation of people and made a couple of fairly minor characters loom larger over the franchise than they necessarily should.
Seems like there's a little bit of hate there from you.
No, not necessarily hate. Just mild resentment that we have hundreds of characters in the X-Men.
Yeah.
If you look across all the franchises, hundreds of characters. And it seems like we just keep cycling back to the same 10.
Yeah, well, it's because they keep killing, like, the hundreds off, and then bringing the hundreds back, and then killing them off again. It's like, why?
They're viewed as expendable in part, I think, because they don't have that fan base crying for don't hurt them.
Oh, no, they're there. I want to vouch and say they're there. Like, J-Miles explained X-Men. They definitely are there. I'm with them, too. Like, why kill this person? They're so great.
I've met, like, a huge, genuinely enormous cadre of young X-Men fans, the Academy X kids, since I started working in the franchise. And it's such a great relief to know that they are there. And there's also just this element of, y'all are so big and your money has power. Why are you not spending your money to make your voices heard?
That's true. That's what shows the most there, folks at home. It really does. Like, you gotta, you buy the books and that shows them. It's like, oh, we went on Twitter and like, yeah, okay, that's cool. But they're like, oh, the books. That's what, when you buy the books, that's really what shows. And Spider-Man, by the way, has been selling pretty well. I've heard really good stuff. I talked to a buddy of mine who runs a comic book store, and your run on Spider-Gwen's been selling out. Like, it's been doing really good.
Oh, I know. I've been really fortunate there, and it makes me so happy. I still can't believe I get to write Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, which is a character where if you would have said that 10 years ago, that even we'd be reading Gwen Stacy-centric book, and that you would be writing Gwen Stacy, like, would you have believed him? Like, 10 years ago. And to the last, like, she's amazing. And it's, by the way, I want to put this out there and say, your run on it has been absolutely, I've loved it. I say stellar a lot, but I've loved it. It's been stellar.
Really well. Thank you.
Of course.
Now, I think everyone who wants to work in comics kind of has the list of characters that they really want to get the chance to write.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even bother putting Gwen Stacy on my list because it was so impossible. And the day the Spider Office asked if I wanted to do Gwen, I stopped hearing sounds for a little while. I was polite and professional and got off the call and sat down and cried.
Oh.
Because there was just no possible way. It was never going to happen. It wasn't even worth wanting.
When was this that you got this call?
That would have been in probably May.
In May? Okay. Well, that was not long ago. Last year?
No. Yeah, this last year. It's a very fast timeline in comics.
Hmm.
Things move very quickly. San Diego Comic-Con of last year was when they announced that I was going to be the new writer of Spider-Gwen. And my poor girlfriend, Amy, I got up Saturday morning, which was the day of the Spider-Man panel. Of course, I'm not on the panel because that would have given away that something was up. Yeah. I had done nothing in the Spider Universe up to that point, so there was no reason for me to be there. But I was planning to attend and wanted to be there when my name was announced to the room. And so I got up that morning and went, oh, hi, honey. You know, how are you? How did you sleep last night? And she looked at me and in the most just flat tone I've ever heard says, next to you. Like, oh, God, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
Ooh. Oh.
She forgave me, though. It's not like I do that all the time.
Hmm. Oh, like, that's good. Is she supportive of you in comics, or is she kind of still iffy on it with all the hate?
Oh, she's very supportive of me in comics. But she spends a lot of time very angry at comic readers.
Fair enough. We can be assholes. That's the lesson learned. We can be really big assholes.
Yeah, it's like she doesn't mind that people criticize me because she's been watching that for 10 years now. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of criticism in book writing. People are not all sunshine and kindness, and that's okay. So she doesn't mind that not everyone thinks I'm a genius. What she minds is that comics fans seem to feel, because there's a degree of ownership to characters that we've loved for a long time, comics fans seem to feel as a group that it's more acceptable to just roll into my Twitter DMs and call me names, or start yelling at me about how I need to do what they think needs to happen with a character, which, by the way, you should never do to a creator, ever.
No.
Because if you come into my Twitter and say, you need to bring Gwen Stacy's Peter Parker back from the dead so they can get married, not only can I not do that without editorial approval, oh no, I've heard that one quite a lot,
wow.
not only is that not something I can do without editorial approval, but if you have said it to me in a public place, there is now no chance I can do it.
No.
Because that creates a position where you are not under contract to Marvel. They don't own your ideas. And maybe you can turn around and say, oh, Shauna McGuire stole my explicit idea. And here's the proof that she saw it.
Hmm.
And now, like, I'm in a sticky legal place. Marvel's not happy. I tell people all the time that giving out spoilers about things that'll be coming in upcoming issues is more than my job is worth, and I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
So please, please don't do that to creators. Be kind to us.
Yeah, listener, folks. I mean, she's speaking the truth. Like, this entire show, she's speaking so much truth. It's, the creators get it. They know you, like, they're as fans too. We want things to be seen. Like, we were like, oh, we got a cool idea. Cool. Everyone has a cool concept or idea. Everyone has one. Don't be like, we want to do this. And first off, as a huge Spider-Man fan, that idea, by the way, no, leave him dead. But in effect of two is, and Spider-Gwen fan, really, because Spider-Gwen doesn't need Peter. Gwen Stacy doesn't need Peter. It's a fact. But yeah, don't message people. Don't, like, send in all this mail or the public place one. That's just stupid. That's just like, you should do this. Like, cool, I'm trying to eat dinner here with my girlfriend. Please leave. Like, please go. Like, no. Like, you shouldn't come up to creators. Just let people be. You know, just, we know your ideas want to be heard. Cool. Make a fan film. Make a fan fiction. Just do that. That's the easiest way to do it. It's the easiest way to get out there and be like, hey, cool. I get my thing shown. But kind of going on Gwen Stacy a little bit here, too, is, I mean, what can you tell us? I don't want you, obviously, it's not worth, I always tell people to, if people ask, like, oh, ask what's happening. It's like, yeah, I'd say what you can talk about. Like, don't get, like, not give any hints that get you fired or anything like that. But what could be some of the things people can look, like, is, like, things are going to be exciting, sad things may be coming. Like, what can people expect from it a little bit here for the upcoming issues of Spider-Man?
Well, number 10, which I'm working on now,
mm-hmm.
Is the 100th issue of Spider-Gwen overall.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be her 100th solo issue since she was created in 2014.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm. So that's one. Number 10.
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to be 100. Jeez. That kind of makes me feel old. I'm not going to lie. I'm like, kind of like, oh, it's like, oh, it's been a while.
So we've got a villain for that issue that I am still really astonished they let me have.
Ooh, okay.
It's not someone we've seen Gwen go up against before.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so exciting to me. My artist is going to hate me for making him draw this.
Oh, it's that rough of a villain, huh?
Well, it's that rough of a visual, if nothing else.
Ooh. Oh, there's a lot of that. I got a few ideas, but I won't say anything because I don't want anything spoiled. So, next issue is number 7. It comes out monthly, am I correct?
It comes out monthly. The next issue that's actually coming out is, I think, number 7.
Hmm. True, because number 6 just came out in stores last week of this recording.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so I have this recording of March
31st. So oh, gosh, it's so hard to keep track.
Yeah, if you're writing number 10.
Because you have to work... Yeah, you have to work several months ahead.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of your artist. You know, otherwise they're not going to be able to keep up. It takes longer to draw an issue than it does to write one.
Hmm.
And I want my artists to love me, so I try to be as timely as I can and make sure that they get everything, you know, well advance of their deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
I make them draw ridiculous things. So my goal is to have them respond to, will you work with Shauna McGuire? With yes, please. Also, a lot of people who go from doing books into comics or who do both get really precious about their words, because when I'm writing a book, it's just on me.
Mm-hmm.
So everything matters. And there are occasionally questions when it's a new artist about, well, how precious is she? Like, is she going to push back at anything that I want to change because it makes better sense visually? And I won't, for the most part. You know, I trust that my artists know their jobs. but I want to give them the time to feel safe and comfortable and content. Hmm. And, you know, Takeshi, who I'm currently working with, is just amazing. Rosie, who was my first artist on Spider-Gwen, was also delightful. That was her first major comic. She did issues 1 through 4.
And they looked glorious.
It did. It was really great.
And they still look glorious, don't get me wrong. But it looks really great.
It just looks differently glorious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, I do want to, like, do you have any books coming out, or are you just focused currently on comics?
I do. I actually have I'm two people in the book world. I'm both Seanan McGuire and Mira Grant. Ooh. Mira does most of my science fiction and thriller work. Ooh. And as Mira, I have my first YA novel coming out next week, and that's Alien Echo, which is set in the alien world, like with the xenomorphs and everything. And it's the first YA alien novel. And it's been fun watching people push back against that idea, you know, oh, fuck YA, as if the golden age of horror weren't the same as the golden age of science fiction, which is 12 to 16.
Yeah, like...
One of my first memories is actually watching Alien with my uncle, and I was like 3. And frankly, that's too young. Some mistakes were made. But at that point in time, the only thing that you can have in adult fiction that you can't have in YA is graphic sex. I don't think you should have graphic sex in an alien novel for any reason.
No, it never works out for me either way.
Yeah, like back to that's not why we're here. Yep. I'm not reading Alien because I want to see somebody getting penetrated genitally.
Exactly.
I'm reading Alien because I want to see someone penetrated with a giant spike.
Yeah, I want to see their brains get, like, this exploded because the brain is getting penetrated because, like, pfft, like that. Like.
Exactly. Exactly. So there's nothing that is so inherent to the franchise that we can't have it in YA.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes out next week. And then in May, I've got my next book under my own name, which is called Middle Game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big, sprawling fantasy alchemy epic, which is currently a standalone. And then in June, I have In the Shadow of Spindrift House coming out. I write a lot.
Yeah, this is a lot. I'm like, my hat tips off to you because, Shauna, that is amazing how much you're able to get. Do you have free time at all anymore?
No, not really, and I don't sleep much.
Yeah, sleep is for the weak. Who needs that, right?
No. Sleep is for the weak. So, you know, if you don't like my comic work and you want me to be too busy to do more of it, buy more of my books. If you do like my comic work and want me to be able to afford to keep doing it, buy more of my books. Really, buying my books is the solution to all mankind's ills.
It's true. World peace, buy my books. What? Yes.
You know, it enables me to eat.
That is, I think, the most important thing. It's nice to be able to eat, you know? It's nice to be able to have a house and be able or apartment and be able to eat.
Yep, and feed my cats.
Yeah,
I have Maine Coons. They are very large.
Yep. Well, a large kitty is the best kitty, almost, to say the least here. You don't want a skinny kitty. Is a cat owner? Very much. But
yeah,
definitely.
Thomas, my boy cat, is 28 pounds and is not medically overweight.
No, we promise. Oh, that's amazing. Well, I want to say thanks for coming on, Seanan. It's been a blast having you on here.
Yeah,
and
thank you for having me.
Of course. I think people can really take a look at this episode because we have a pretty good fan base. And I really want to hope people take a look at this episode and be like, one, you're amazing and you're one dedicated hard worker, to say the least, of the craft. And the two is, you know, maybe you get a different perspective on stuff and how people are as fans and how you treat others and whatnot. Because I think that people's eyes and brains need to be awakened to this in the world as a guy who's an equalist. And I like to tell people,
let's not be assholes.
That is true. That is so true. And there's a quote. I want to run this by you. As a fellow X-Men fan. I worked on this for a little bit with people. And it's a kind of a cool thing to be like, oh, what's your political stance? Or how do you feel about people? It's like, well, I'm a huge X-Men fan. So that's it. Just like, I'm a huge X-Men fan. So what do you think I am? Like, what do you... I'm an equalist. Yeah. Like, that's what I like to tell people a lot of times. But it's definitely... This episode will definitely change people's... And hopefully... Maybe people like are curious about Spider-Gwen and Gwen Stacy herself as a character and be able to be like, I like Gwen. Yeah. And like, let's go buy the book.
If you can't find the earlier issues of our run, because they are largely sold out everywhere at this point, the first trade of the Ghost Spider run comes out in May.
Ooh.
So that's very soon now.
Yeah, that's about... Yeah, because this will be out... Not tomorrow's Monday, but the Monday after.
Okay, cool.
But that's still, like... That's still very soon. That's still, like... Yeah, people listening to this, go pick it up. Go to your local comic book store. Support her. Support her work. She's got cats. Buy the books! Come on! Like, I can't believe that. It's been amazing. You let me out of loss for words, which is a guy who works in my fields. It's really tough to do. Like, there's very few people who can do it. And one of them is actually sitting in the studio with me right now. That's a very special someone, a girlfriend of mine. And she leaves me at a loss for words. But you come on, and this, everything you said to me is really, I'm going to, like, take it as a message and, like, spread it to others. And hopefully we can change the world.
Well, it's got to be changed into something.
Amen to that. It's so true. Well, thanks for coming on. And it's social media plugs. We got to get those so people can follow you. Where can they find your stuff at? And you on social media.
You can find me on either Twitter as Sean, at Sean and McGuire, or on Tumblr as Sean and McGuire. I'm not really on Facebook. I do have an account, but it won't do you any good whatsoever. So come to Twitter or Tumblr.
Okay.
We yell a lot there.
Yeah, Tumblr especially. Yeah, Twitter too. Yeah.
They're both yelling places.
Yeah, I like to sit on the sidelines of Twitter and be like, hi, I like this post. How's it going? I support you guys. I'm not mean. I don't like to yell at people. Although I will yell back. Every now and then it happens. But definitely, folks, go follow Shannon. Go follow her and, like, read the books. Like, I have a Spider-Gwen poster hanging up in the home studio right now because I love Gwen Stacy as a character and think she's going to last a very long time. Obviously she is, because she's in the damn movie series now.
Right. Into the Spider-Verse is amazing.
Oh, it's so amazing. It's truly... I'm glad to know you liked it. Really quickly, though, before we go, did you like her portrayal in the movie?
I did. I wish that they had been a little more clear that that wasn't necessarily the Earth 65 Gwen Stacy. I mean, Jason Latour worked on it, and he is probably the only other person that loves her like I do. But she doesn't do ballet in the comics, so that is not Gwen Stacy of Earth 65. And I get a lot of angry, why isn't Gwen her ballet slippers male now?
What? Huh. People love to hate, I think. So
people do love to hate. People need to take some naps.
It's true. Take a nap. Just take a drink. You're fine. It's fine. It's good. But yeah, I'm glad to know that you still liked it, but there was a little bit of thing in there. I didn't mind her at all. I thought she was pretty cool. I thought she was good. There was a couple of those things. Yeah, I was like, why? But c'est la vie. We can never win them all, but definitely thank you for coming on. And folks at home, if you guys want to follow the Comic Chronicle podcast, because we've been some fun people on, like Shannon herself, and to stay tuned with everything, because we're definitely going to support you and all the work you've done, is at Real Fan Corp on Twitter and Instagram, Fan Corp Network on Facebook and YouTube. You can follow me at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram and at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter. And that's where you guys can follow me and the network and the show and whatnot too. And I'm not going to say it enough. You are absolutely amazing, Shannon.
Well, thanks for having me. Have a great afternoon.
Of course, you too as well. And everyone at home, stay classy, New York City.